This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Good jobs with good wages. It's what everybody wants, but millions of Americans have bad jobs. They endure low wages, poor benefits, and few opportunities for advancement.
And here's a case in point. The average American cashier makes about $20,000 a year, hardly enough to support a family on. And it's part of conventional wisdom that to protect their bottom lines, many companies have no choice but to offer low-paying jobs.
To put it another way, the best way to raise profits is to cut labor costs. So lots of companies, especially retailers, offer lots of bad jobs with low pay and no benefits. But our next guest is challenging that way of thinking. She says investing more in workers can actually increase sales and productivity.
In other words, valuing your workers can actually lead to higher profits. Zeynep Ton has spent the past 10 years studying this issue. She's an adjunct professor, Associate Professor of Operations Management at MIT's Sloan School of Management and author of the forthcoming book, The Good Job Strategy. And Professor Ton, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
It's really good to have you. Listeners, we want you involved in this conversation. Tell us what you think. Can good jobs that pay a living wage and good benefits actually help a company's bottom line? Zeynep Ton says the answer is yes. What's your experience with this issue, either as an employer or an employee? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So Zeynep Ton, you claim that one in five Americans have what you call bad jobs. What do you mean by that? What's a bad job in this case?
Great question. So bad jobs come with, first of all, low wages. Wages mm-hmm. don't let an employee to be able to support their families. As you mentioned, I focus most of my research on retail, and retail in particular, bad jobs come with wages that, and an average cashier makes $9 an hour. Mm-hmm. And average salesperson makes about $10 an hour. But it's not just low wages that represent bad jobs. Bad jobs also come with poor benefits and schedules that make it very hard for people to have a normal life. Let me just give you an example from one of the retail employees that I interviewed about 8 months ago. And let me describe to you what her job is like and how bad it is. This is Janet. She started working for a large retailer in 2005. Mm-hmm. She used to have her own business before, but she had to close it down because of the economy. She started at $8.20 per hour. She was a very good employee. She got promoted multiple times. And by the time I interviewed her in 2012, she was an hourly manager, and she was in charge of dozens of people. She was in charge of the cashiers. She was in charge of the cart pushers. She was in charge of the money center. Lots of responsibility. She was solving lots of problems. For all this, she got $11.60 an hour.
Mm.
Now,
so what does that translate to in an annual salary, for example?
So if she works 40 hours a week, that will be probably around $23,000, $24,000. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, and this is where I want to get to with schedules, even full-time employees don't get to work 40 hours a week mm-hmm. because 94% of retailers consider anyone who works 30 hours or more to be a full-time employee. So Janet could work 30 hours 1 week and 40 hours the next week. She told me she rarely works for 40 hours, but her salary at the end comes to about $22,000. Now, this is just that, but Janet never knows when she's going to work.
Mm-hmm. So there's instability, there's uncertainty. Now, you've been researching this for more than 10 years, and I understand that it was Walmart that first got you started. Are we talking about Walmart here?
It wasn't actually Walmart that started. Believe it or not, my research started with Borders Group.
Borders, interesting.
Borders okay. was my dissertation site.
I see.
And that's where I conducted a lot of empirical research. This is late 90s, mm-hmm. early 2000s. And Borders was the first place where I saw the consequences of bad jobs and what the how much money retailers could lose as a result of providing bad jobs.
Now, in your research, you identify something that you call a vicious cycle in retail business around paying low wages. What is this vicious cycle?
Yeah, so the vicious cycle starts with seeing labor as as a cost to be minimized. And when you see labor as a cost to be minimized, you end up having either low quality of employees in terms of you don't get the best employees because you don't pay them a lot, you don't provide them training, you don't provide them enough resources. And it also starts with low quantity of employees, so understaffed stores, not having enough employees. When you have either low quality or low quantity of employees, then you start having lots of operational problems at the stores. Mm. So products are not where they're supposed to be, so customers can't find them, so you can't sell them. Products have the wrong price stickers. Obsolete products, old milk, is not removed from the shelves, or rotten tomatoes are still staying on the shelves, or checkout lines are too long. All these operational problems result in lower sales and lower profits. Now, when retailers have low sales or low profits, you know, their labor budgets are often set as a percentage of sales. So when sales are lower, then their labor budgets are lower. And when their labor budgets are lower, they can invest in their people. So we come back to the vicious cycle, low quantity and quality of employees, and the cycle continues. Unfortunately, the cycle is obviously bad for employees, but it's also bad for us customers, because we don't experience good customer service. And it's terrible for companies because they leave a lot of money on the table.
Sure. And instead, you've looked into a very different kind of model, represented by four companies in particular: Trader Joe's, Quick Trip, Costco, and a Spanish supermarket chain called Mercadona, that actually pay employees pretty well. They offer benefits. They give employees a lot of flexibility and some authority. So what did you find out about them, about how the link between how well they treat their employees and how that affects their bottom lines?
Yep. One of the things I observed at these retailers is that they don't operate in that vicious cycle, but instead they operate in a virtuous cycle, in which, you know, great employees, both in terms of quantity and quality, drive great operational performance. So products are where they're supposed to be. Checkout lines are not as long. They have the right price stickers, etc. And then they have high sales and high profits. And when they have higher sales, higher profit, they can invest more in their employees. So this virtuous cycle continues. But what I also observed is that the virtuous cycle does not operate on its own. You can't just pay your employees more and expect this great performance. What I saw at these retailers is that they combined their investment in employees with operational excellence. They combined this investment with a set of operational decisions that lower their costs, improve labor productivity, and really put their employees at the center of their success.
All right. Well, let's talk about a case in point. Talk about Trader Joe's. I think that's a place that a lot of our listeners probably spend some time buying their foods at. What are they doing that contributes to this positive cycle that you described?
Let me provide one example from Trader Joe's. If you go to a Trader Joe's store, you will see a much smaller selection than when you go to a typical supermarket. So a typical supermarket has about 40,000 products in their stores. A typical Trader Joe's store will have perhaps around 4,000 products, a tenth of a typical supermarket. Now, let's think about how Trader Joe's benefits from this. Let's think about my favorite example is toothpaste, right? There are about 350 different types of toothpaste out on the market.
Don't we want choice in this big, brash country of ours? Don't we want all these products?
Actually, what Trader Joe's does is they go through all the toothpaste and they say, these are the best ones for our customers. They curate those for us, and we trust them. And when they offer us fewer choices in toothpaste that we trust, they can leverage a lot of cost benefits. So when you have fewer products in a particular category, you have higher, you know, better volume discounts, your supply chain is simpler, your store operations are simpler, manufacturing costs are lower. So you gain a lot of cost advantages if you can operate with lower products. On the other hand, because Trader Joe's invests in its employees, it can use its employees as substitutes for different products. For example, you go there and you say, I'm looking for this particular toothpaste. And then the Trader Joe's employee might tell you, well, we don't have that, but here is what we have. And here is how good this product is. Because Trader Joe's invests in its employees, it can make this operational choice of offering less. and offering less allows Trader Joe's employees to be a lot more productive and lowers its costs. So these are combined benefits.
Now, we began this segment talking about the typical American cashier who makes about $20,000 a year in this country. How does a salary like that compare to a typical salary, a lower level salary at Trader Joe's?
Trader Joe's starting salaries are usually around $10 to $12 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And a full-time employee can make around $40,000.
Right.
Store managers
make a
lot more.
So a living wage. Yeah.
Yes, when they go from part-time status to full-time status. Let me mention that when I looked at these four retailers, not every employee at all of these retailers earn a living wage.
Yeah.
For some employees, they offer part-time jobs that are not supposed to support a family. These are part-time jobs, and they hire students, et cetera, for those jobs.
Well, if this makes so much sense for the employees, if it makes so much sense for a business's bottom line, why do relatively few retailers and businesses in general sort of embrace this idea?
One of the things is it's really hard to do. So what I call the good job strategy, that's the title of my book. The good job strategy is complex. It has many components. It's not just investment in employees, but it's also operational excellence, and that shows up in terms of the four different operating decisions that retailers make. So many things have to work together to make this work, to provide the lowest prices to customers, good service, good profits, and good jobs. The other is that labor costs tend to be one of the largest costs in any service business. In retail, for example, labor costs tend to be the largest controllable expenses. And most retailers view labor as solely an expense to be minimized. And when you come to business with this view of seeing labor as a cost to be minimized, then this shows up in your performance metrics. When you evaluate store managers, you evaluate them on how well they manage their labor cost. And there's one terrible characteristic of labor cost, which is, when you spend $500 on training, right? That cost is direct, it's immediate, it's easy to quantify.
Mm-hmm.
The benefit of that investment is indirect, it's long-term, it's harder to quantify. So when managers weigh this direct, immediate cost, quantifiable cost versus indirect, difficult to quantify benefits, they are on the side of cost and the benefits. And unfortunately, both managers and investors have a poor understanding of, these short-term costs versus long-term benefits.
Listeners, we're talking to Zeynep Ton. She's an adjunct associate professor at MIT and the author of the forthcoming book, The Good Jobs Strategy. And Zeynep Ton, stand by. I want to bring another voice in this conversation. David Tobar is Vice President of Communications for Walmart U.S. And David, thanks for joining us. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. I appreciate the time.
So respond quickly to what you've heard Zeynep Ton talking about here. The argument that you've heard thus far, particularly the argument that offering low wages is a choice, not an economic necessity. Give us a sense of the pay grade of your employees at Walmart.
Yeah, thanks. I'd be happy to, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak on your show today. I'm glad you called us and allowed us the opportunity to come on, because hopefully we can give a kind of a real-world perspective to this, because I think, when you get outside of the academic world and you're actually, talking about real people and real jobs, you see quite a different story. Walmart has 1.3 million people that work for the company here in the U.S., and we really represent the American dream. This country was founded on opportunities for all and hard work paying off and really trying to make a difference in people's lives, and the same thing is the case at Walmart. So people may come to Walmart for a job, and we find that they stay for a career, and they wouldn't stay if we didn't provide opportunities for them, if we didn't train them, if we didn't provide development and advancement so that they can move up up the ladder throughout the organization. In fact, over 250,000 of our employees have been with us for more than 10 years. And so these are some of the facts that don't often get told and I think are just misconstrued when you try to do an academic study.
No, David Tobar, I absolutely appreciate what you said, and we haven't actually made any claims thus far about Walmart. I mean, we just want I just want to come to you with this very sort of basic question. Can you give us a sense of the pay grade of your employees? And we're talking about it in the perspective, in this broader perspective of the idea of paying your employees well actually translates well in terms of your bottom line. I mean, is that a sort of basic idea that you accept?
Yeah. So we have a range of pay at Walmart, of course, and there's a lot of different jobs at Walmart. So we do have entry-level jobs, and but oftentimes those jobs lead to bigger jobs. We have store manager jobs. Our average store manager at Walmart makes $170,000 a year, and at the top end, some of them make about $250,000 a year. I mean, that's doctor money right there.
Sure. What about an entry-level? What about an entry-level employee?
Entry level makes about the same as all the other examples that Professor Tan mentioned. There's no difference at Walmart. Why? Because that's what the market dictates. I mean, if we paid less than them, why would people want to come to Walmart? Every time we open a store, and we open a couple of hundred a year, we have thousands of people who apply to work at Walmart. If we paid less than other retailers, nobody would want to come work for us. So why do we get 500,000 people that come to apply for Walmart every year? Why? Because we have good jobs, competitive pay, comprehensive benefits packages, and an opportunity that is unparalleled in the retail environment to advance. Mm-hmm. We've got 40,000 people that are in our management ranks right now, and that entry-level management job makes about $50,000 to $60,000 a year. And every year, 160,000 people get promoted at Walmart. Mm-hmm. So they have those kind of opportunities. Listen to this stat for a second. As I said, we hire 500,000 people a year. 20% of those people are rehires, meaning they worked for Walmart at one time, they left, they went somewhere else, and they came back because they realized they could get a better opportunity at Walmart.
David Tobar, I want to thank you very much for joining us and for offering this perspective and getting us into our conversation. Very grateful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. Appreciate it.
That's David Tobar. He's Vice President of Communications for Walmart U.S. So let me come back to you, Zeynep Tan. We just heard David Tobar there. What sort of stood out to you in terms of the argument that he was making?
One of the things is that people tend to take retail jobs not because they would like to take retail jobs, but there are not that many jobs to go around anymore. Mm-hmm. Economic Policy Institute predicts that by 2020, 30% of all jobs in the United States are going to be low-wage jobs, so jobs that don't allow employees to make enough money to earn a living. When you look at Bureau of Labor Statistics, you find that most occupations with the largest employment growth in the next 7 years are going to come from places like retail, restaurants, daycares, etc., that are low-wage jobs. So companies that offer low-wage jobs or bad jobs will continue to get people because there just aren't that many jobs there.
Argue that under-investing in employees is not only bad for them and for business and for the businesses, but also costly for society as a whole, right?
Yes, it's costly for the society. So let me go back to Janet, for example.
Yeah, sure.
I was mentioning, the low wages, but Janet's schedule changes from week to week, and she's an hourly manager. Some days she works from, 5 to 9, and the next day she might be scheduled at 5 a.m. in the morning. Now, Janet has a child. Now, imagine a working mother having a child at home and her schedule changes all the time. How is this person going to take care of their children, find daycare, or even help them with their homework, etc., right? And they're, when they don't have health benefits. Janet she pays $70 a month for her insurance, but her deductible is $3,500, so she doesn't see a doctor until it's too late. When you do that, there is the emergency service costs and obviously, health consequences and the consequences on the economy. And of course, these people, when they don't have enough money to get by, they can't afford to buy merchandise. They can't afford to go shopping either. So there are whole, from managing our children's future to healthcare costs to the consumer spending, there are all sorts of effects on our society.
Zeynep Tan, I want to get at least one caller into this conversation. Let's go to Alex, who's calling from East Boston. Hi, Alex. You're on the air right now. Do we have Alex? We don't have Alex. Okay, apparently Alex isn't there. How about John from Brookline? Should we try John from Brookline?
Sure.
Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I I left my corporate job 2 years ago to do a startup, and I've worked three part-time low-wage jobs that allow me to live in East Boston with one other person. I don't have a lot of extra cash on hand. And I agree with some of what both of the callers have said. My experience at two of these jobs, which were coffee shops, was in line with what the last guest mentioned. I didn't have a lot of control of my schedule. I did have health benefits, but they weren't excellent. And you're not paid for what's always expected, which is great service. You're paid for the de-skilled labor that you're doing. However, there were tons of people who would have taken my job. I didn't really see how my employer had another option. And I think the elephant in the room is, well, it's a few things, but basically boils down to, in this regulatory environment, it's really hard to start a small business unless you're in the tech sector, and you know the internet doesn't have a lot of barriers to entry. And the Federal Reserve monetary policy and the federal regulatory policy.
John, I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you off because our time is really running out. Can you wrap this up for a question for our guest, Zeynep Ton?
Yeah. I mean, I think the market's been so distorted for skilled labor and large business that we're at this point. And how does the guest see adding more potentially regulations to make these companies pay more money? How is that going to solve anything? That's just going to mean they won't be able to hire as many people.
All right, John, you put a lot on the table there, and Zeynep Ton.
Yeah, and John, I want to thank you for your call and your question. I didn't look at the regulation part, but let me just emphasize one aspect of your thing. You mentioned the de-skilled jobs, and this was a very important line because when I look at my model retailers, Quick Trip, Costco, Trader Joe's, etc., the jobs, the way they design the jobs, end up having jobs not being de-skilled jobs. These companies emphasize, you know, standardization with empowerment. They give a lot of decision rights to their employees. And as a result of this, their employees can return a lot more to the companies. So they turn a job that could be de-skilled, but they add a lot to the job to make it a skilled job, and that's how they get the benefits of their investment in labor.
Mm. Well, Zeynep Ton, it's a important and provocative argument, and thank you so much for bringing it to us. We're very grateful.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Zeynep Ton. She's an adjunct associate professor of operations management at MIT Sloan School of Management and author of the forthcoming book, The Good Jobs Strategy. And listeners, the conversation continues on RadioBoston.org, so keep it going. Let us know what you think. And stay with us. Still to come, the musical ensemble Chameleon brings together the works of three 20th century composers. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.